This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to part two, the after show, the conversation now that the official part is done. The lights and the cameras are off, although they're still on and we're still going. But it's kind of fun to break this in and some more topics that I have. Brad Parker is still with me from Forum Piper. Brad, how was the first part of the conversation?
It was great. It was great. Made it super simple to talk about all the things I like to talk about. I appreciate that.
Super, super easy. And time just flew. We were just talking about that in the brief gap before hitting record, which is always a good sign. If anyone's either been on a show, listened to a show, been in a meeting, been on a phone call, and there's the ones that go by quick. And then there's the ones where you're just like, oh my gosh, when will this end? So I'm glad to hear that it went by quick for you. I was fun. I was having a blast. People can see it. Like, here's my notes. I've found that the more interested I am and curious, it just makes for a good conversation. I got a bunch of stuff I want to talk about. So let's start with your sales experience as a kid. You talk about selling golf balls, talk about selling candy. Like, when did you get into that mode where you're like, I want money to do things. I could sell things to people and that would be the vehicle. Like, when did that hit you and what was that like as a kid?
I feel like I was born with it for some reason. I can't remember the time where I like, hey, I have to have money. You know, my parents were, I think, pretty smart from that aspect when I was a kid. You know, they had the list of chores you had to do and my reward was quarters and dollars, you know, and then if I got good grades, I got paid for my grades. So just at a very young age, my dad taught me about money, you know, and so I just started to figure out how to get it. Living on a golf course, I was lucky. I could go swim in the lakes, get golf balls out. I would set up on the weekends and I'd sell all the golf balls. Then I would take that money and I would go to Sam's Club and I would get Now and Later's lemon heads and blow pops and sell those for like a quarter each and 10 cents.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd go to school and just sell candy all day. And I would take orders the day before and then I would come in with it all packaged and I would bring it the next day to school. I did that until I got in trouble by the bus driver. She wrote me up for selling candy on the bus, you know, but then it just naturally went into other things. You know, my mom was very crafty. And so we made tie-dye shirts when I was a kid and we'd sell the tie-dye shirts to kids. And then they moved into the craft business. My dad was actually in the entertainment business. He ran Six Flags amusement parks and he shifted into the craft business. And so I got to start working for my dad at the age of 12. I'll never forget when I was 12, he told me, you know, listen, Brad, one day you're going to be 16 and you're going to want to drive, you know, and I'm not going to buy you a car. You know, nice. I was sitting outside of the barbershop. I can remember it like it was yesterday. And I was like, well, how am I going to get the car? He's like, well, you need to find a job. And I was like, well, you're hiring. And so I started working for them, painting pine cones. My mom used to make pine cones look like Santa Claus and bunnies and stuff. So I got to paint about a billion pine cones and I bought a 64 and a half Mustang when I was 15. So, and I still have that car today. So again, just teaching me the value of hard work and money, was something that my dad was really, really good at. So, and still working today.
I love the story. And then I love the fact that you obviously appreciated the car enough that you still have it to today, right? Like, for probably various reasons. What would you say was your first official sales job, like paid working at a company, family or not, but in sales?
In sales. Well, every job is sales, right? Because you're always selling yourself. So when I was growing up, when I always worked for my parents, but then I needed additional money, right? And so I always looked for jobs that you could make tips, you know? So for my first job was at Kroger. I was a bag guy, you know, and I understood how to communicate with the guest and bag their things appropriately so I could extract tips, right? You know, I could never understood why anybody would work at Publix and be a bag boy because you couldn't get the tips, right? So Kroger was the first job. And then I worked at IHOP and Shoney's. Like, these were the only restaurants that would hire a kid, you know, that was not 18, I think, you know. So again, tips. So you're just selling yourself, you know, through good service and bringing value to people. And if you do that, they'll give you more money. And then my first true official sales job was working for my dad. The company was From the Heart. And so we would go to trade shows. And set up the booth and have all my mom's crafts. And we would sell those things to people all over the country. So I got just into the sales game super, super young, you know.
I love it. Is that service part where you said, you know, if you provide good service, give people what they want, And then obviously they're going to reward you for it in one way or another. Is that something you got from your parents? Was that a thing from your mom, your dad, something you just picked up on your own?
I feel like it was just something that naturally came along, right? Like if you don't present well, like if I didn't clean the golf balls before I tried to sell them out of the lake, I'm not going to maximize, you know, the money I can get for them. Right. So always just thinking about that presentation and trying to figure out what your customer wants. Like everybody's got problems, right? So one of my sayings is identify the problem and solve it. Right. And then I ask people, when are we going to solve this problem? And the answer better be immediately, right? Like, do not let a problem just be out there, right? So, always look around, see what's going on. There's a market for everything, and identify that problem and solve it. And if you can solve it well, ask for money. You know, the only thing I wish I could go back in time and tell my younger self that golf balls are worth way more than a quarter. Okay. Like, I could have been getting a dollar for these things and I would have been like the richest 10-year-old ever, you know, just like,
I could just see you doing that. And it's probably best. Obviously, it didn't work out that way, because I could just see you like quitting school and, you know, selling golf balls and going down that path. And, you know, who knows where life would have gone.
Yeah.
Some kind of bad after school special of making too much money as a 10-year-old or whatever. And where that could go. All right. So one other thing I think is fascinating, you and I talked about, and it kind of came up in the first part, where it's, you know, the challenge of selling into businesses, especially, right? This same goes through with consumers. And we could talk about both with this, but before we hit record for the first show, we were kind of talking about some things. And I know that one of the challenges with sales is that when you're trying to get to that person, or you do finally get to that person, there's typically a trail of people before you who have also tried it and maybe succeeded and talked them into buying something they regret, or they failed because of their gross manipulation tactics. And essentially, they've basically ruined it for everyone else. Right? Like the bad salespeople, and not just bad being like bad intention, but just like bad as ineffective and not professional, they will ruin it for other people by the time you get to somebody because they don't trust you. How do you approach that? Like, how have you found to solve that, both either in the retail or now with the B2B space, where you're calling a retail business owner and you know what it's like being a retail business owner, being hammered by people just trying to sell you crap all the time, but you know that you actually can help them? How do you break through that?
I mean, that's tricky, right? I mean, when you think about how many sales organizations that are out there, and even growing my own, you know, at one point we outsourced our SDR department, you know, and so I wasn't in full control of it. And so what was the impression, right, that I was giving about my business, right, to 300 phone calls a day, right? And so, I mean, I could say that, you know, there's definitely times in my process that I wasn't a good salesperson, right? Like, I was talking on the show, like when I was younger, I would train somebody one time and say, go do your job. And I was almost afraid to listen to what they were saying, because if it was wrong, I would have to teach them.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I didn't know what I was doing when I was a younger manager. Right. And now it's like, I want to hear everything and I want to help you be successful because I want you to be successful. Right. So, you know, I always tell everybody, you know, you can only control your four walls, right? Like, I can't do anything about what other people are doing, right? Like, I don't watch the news. I do not care, right? Like, what can I do in my business and in my life to change things? So when I'm teaching my team, you know, one, I try to get them to leverage the fact that, you know, the founder of the company is a 20-year veteran in the retail space. So we do understand what we're talking about. So we're always going to talk about that. And hopefully that resonates with business owners, you know, because they know they're talking to somebody that goes through the same challenges that they go through. But at the end of the day, you got to figure out how to bring value, you know, and just bring that value, no matter if you close the sale or not, right? Like, if I can educate somebody on how to track data better in their business and they can go out and track that data, there's 100 ways you can track the data. You don't have to use my system. But by all means, go track the data and be successful, right? Because the more successful business owners we have out there, just the better the world is, you know? So just bring value. And don't expect anything in return.
What have you found? Because again, I see the scenario playing out across sales organizations all the time where they have a product that's of value. They're working to get to that best decision maker, whether it's, you know, B2C or B2B. And they want to differentiate themselves when that conversation begins. How do you differentiate yourself, or how have you taught your team, especially your account executives who aren't you, who aren't the founder, who don't have your retail experience, so that they can translate to that person? Like, no, we're different. I'm trying to help you, not just meet my quota.
Yeah, we just immediately try to identify the problem that they might be having, right? So in our business, what we're doing is helping automate finance, right? So we start the conversation off by talking about their current finance programs, right? So do you have these and do you use these, right? And the answer to that is yes, because we've researched their business, right? So I'm always moving down the yes, 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 yes close, right? So if I can ask them questions that I know they have to say yes to, it's going to be much easier for them to take the demo, right? So are you using these products? Yes. Are you successful with those products? Does it, you know, help your customers make purchases in your business? Yes. Great. Would you like to make more money with those programs? Yes. Right. So great. Listen, let me get 15 minutes of your time. Right. We have a retail finance management software that was built by retailers for retailers. And we'd love to show you, right, how we can help you drive success with it. Right. So, and look, if you're in retail, you didn't open the doors not to sell things. Right. You know, sometimes you just forget, you know, that maybe the way you're doing it isn't the best way. Right. Or there's just little tiny nuggets, you know, that you can grab and add to your business model that are going to help it, you know, get that extra 10 or 20% revenue that you've been trying to find. Yeah.
Makes sense. I love it. And I love that path of yeses, right? Where somebody's going through this process. If they say no, then obviously that's a conversation point to have, and or maybe a stopping point where they're just not interested. If they say no, not interested in making more money, then you know you can rebut that somewhat. But if they're closed-minded, like that, they're not going to do it anyway. But
it's best just to let those people fly into the wind, right? Like just you know, don't worry about it. Don't be upset if somebody's not smart. It is okay. Not everybody that's a business owner should be one. You know. Nope.
Let evolution and the economy take control and do what it does, and it will.
And look, some people just aren't ready. You know, like when I started in retail, my first 7 or 8 years, I wasn't ready to be the best retailer in the game. You know, like we closed at 9, I shut the doors at 9. I wanted to go home, right? And it was my family's business, right? So, you know, you grow and you develop over time. And the trick is, if I can bring value without expecting anything, eventually everybody will kind of come into that evolution if they want to grow and be the best business person they can be.
Yep. I love that too, because sometimes it is just about timing. So, you know, everyone's on a different path and a different journey, and not everyone's ready. And you just, you know, understand that and do your best thing from the sales side. All right. Final question for this. Otherwise, I know that this is going to be, we could just keep going. How have you seen like sales change over, let's say, your 20 years in retail? Let's say mostly from a buyer's perspective, whether that is a consumer and how they've changed from 20 years ago to now to, you know, B2B environment. Like how has that changed? How's the approach changed? What should salespeople be doing different now than what they've always done?
You know, I think over the last 20 years, consumers have probably gotten smarter, right? Or I don't say smarter, but more educated or informed, right? Like we were talking about reviews, right? So you got your people that go on at the 5-star reviews. Can you believe those or not? Were those orchestrated? You got the 1-star reviews. Those are the people that are just super disgruntled, but they probably messed up the process. So you got those 3-stars. Those are probably truly accurate about the product, you know? So as consumers, they're looking at those reviews, right? And making decisions based off the word of mouth of other people, right? So as a salesperson, you know, you have to be present or as a business owner, you have to be present with your presence, right? So if you have reviews online, you better answer them and have a conversation. If you're on social media and you're doing posts and you're not commenting about those, you know, and responding back, it's called social media, not post media, right? So it's like, you have to create the conversation for your potential customers so they feel like they're a part of the conversation, you know, the whole time. You know, I'd mentioned Shop Window on the last one. You know, well, that CRM system allows retailers to take notes, understand exactly what the customer journey is. If I send them collateral and content, it tracks what they're doing. So when I speak to that customer again, if I sent them some content and they clicked on the coupon, well, I know they're interested in a discount. If they clicked on financing, I know that they need to do low monthly payments. If they clicked on the value document, I know they're interested in value, right? So the retailer has got to get smarter and understand what is important to their customer and then deliver the value to the customer, what's important, right? And not everybody's the same, right? Some people want value. Some people want a discount, right? As a retailer, I want to sell to both of you. Right. So I'm going to come in and build value to the person that wants value. And I'm going to make sure that the other person understands we have low monthly payments if they want to finance, you know? So, just get to know the customer, try to do everything you can to understand what that customer really wants, you know, because customers want value and they want to shop with people that they feel comfortable with. And they want to shop with people that, everyone else feels comfortable with, you know? So,
yeah. As you're talking about that, the biggest takeaway for me is the fact that instead of as an organization, a retail sales organization could be B2B, instead of thinking I have this solution and of course you're going to want it and let me tell you how it works and how you're going to buy it, instead, okay, meeting the customer where they want and it, you want to give them value, but it's also their game that they're playing, not your game. You don't have all the cards anymore, right? Like it's a level playing field, especially with the internet, where, you know, they don't need you as much as you might need them as a sales organization. So I think that's fascinating to think about, especially with the stuff that you can now track and the technology that's there to then create that better sales experience.
Yeah. Like I mentioned before, right? It's one of the three pillars, right? Give your customers a better experience. Look for anything out there that can help you give your customers a frictionless experience in purchasing your product, right? And if you focus on that, you will identify the problems and then you can go solve them.
Yep. And I love that too, as a tie back to what we talked about in the first one, which is where, you know, what you're currently selling and helping business owner, retail owners with is maybe something they don't even know they have that problem with. But if they take those pillars that you mentioned, you know, listen to part one and any sales organization and look at that, then that will start to identify where the unknown unknowns are, right? The things that you don't know that you don't know, and then you now know of them, and then now you can now fix them. So I love it.
I always try to give any customer or potential customer like homework, right? So I'll say, listen, go to your business tomorrow and apply for financing and go through the whole process and then document it and tell me if it was a good experience for you, right? Or fill out a form on your website, see what content and information comes to you. How long does it take for someone to reach out to you, right? And what was that experience like, right? Because just because you put some systems and processes in place 10 years ago, right, doesn't mean that it's still working. And are your customers getting a good experience, right? You're spending a fortune to get people to call you, fill out a form, or walk through your doors. And if you don't have your presentations or your processes nailed down, like, why are you even doing marketing, right? So yeah, just, you know, go through your own process from time to time and figure out how you can make it better.
And the successful organizations that I have seen do that, where owners, leaders, executives do that routinely, where they go through the customer journey so they can see what's really happening, not what they wrote in the manual or in a training module in the past, or sure, what they just assume is happening, right? Inspect what you expect. So I think it's a great place to end this part two, the after show. Again, for people listening or watching this, Mr. Brad Parker is on LinkedIn. So if you go on LinkedIn and search for him, the company is Formpiper. So formpiper.com, great place to go to start that and see, especially if you're in the retail space. For anyone watching or listening to this, check that out and see if that will help. Maybe either something you know that you need some help with on the financing side, or maybe even things you don't know. Because again, it's all about helping lift everybody up and fix it, especially because I think one of the big things and why I was excited to have you on the show, Brad, is that you're helping solve problems for businesses so they can be more successful, so that they can, you know, both for their employees and for their customers and the whole customer experience and the journey, which just makes things better. And it helps the companies who want to win, win, which then supports everybody in the right way. So Brad, I appreciate you coming on and running through this after show part two as well.
Yeah, it was great. Great. Anytime.
Thanks. And for everyone watching and listening, like I said, make sure to check out part one, whether it's on the podcast, you can check out the video on YouTube to make sure to catch that in the conversation. If you want the links that I mentioned, those will be in the show notes as well. But until next time, keep selling with authentic persuasion.